So this week we have we begin Sefer Vayikra, the book of Leviticus, also known as Toiras Kohanim, the Torah of the priesthood. And it begins Vayikra el Moshe, and he called to Moses. Vayedaber Hashem Elov, and God spoke to him, Me Ohel Moed, from the tent of meeting, that's the tabernacle, the Mishkan. Lemor is saying, Daber el Bnei Yisrael, speak to the children of Israel, Vyomato Alehim, and say to them, Odom, a man, Ki Yakriv Mikem Karban Hashem, who will offer from you, or a man of you, who will offer an offering, a sacrifice to God, Min HaBehemo, from the cattle, min haboka, from the cows, min hatzoin, from the sheep, takrivos karbanchem, you should offer your, bring your karbanot, your sacrifices. And then the sedra, the parsha goes on to discuss the different kind of sacrifices that there were, beginning with oila, the burnt offering. So, I want to look at, there's a medrash, the medrash is divided into two kinds. There's a medrash agoda, an agadic medrash, which deals usually with a homily and you know, lessons that we learn for our own benefit, edification from the stories that are being the narrative in the Torah. And there's a separate department of Medrash called Medrash Halacha, which takes the text and discusses the different ways in which we learn laws from it, which are very akin to the Mishnah. And the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva, Reb Nechemya, Reb Yeshua, Reb Yehuda, Reb Yossi, Reb Shimon. These are the authors of the Mechilta, the Sifro, the Sifri. So the Medrash of the book of Vayikra, Leviticus, the Torah of the Kohanim, the Torah of the Kohen, is called the Sifro. And it begins with the Braisa of Reb Yishmo, which is quoted in the davening of Shachris in the morning at the end of Karbonos before we get to Hoidu. There's a brace of Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel says that there are 13 hermeneutical principles with which the Torah can be studied, and the halacha can be deduced. The very first one is the kal v'chomer. You have what's called in Latin a fortiori argument, right? So if somebody falls out of the second floor window and he breaks to both legs and then a collarbone, then if he falls out of the fourth window, he's definitely going to break at least two arms and two legs, right? And probably something else as well. But you know, we're going to say that at least two legs, because right? So that's a kal v'chomer, which means like a light and a heavy. If the 10 foot fall made this damage, then a 30 foot fall will do certainly at least as much. Gzeira Shova means you got two verses and they both use the same phrase, and so there's a connection, there's something to be learned from that, and so on. There are 13 different principles like this with which the text can be an exegesis can be done on the text. So that's the beginning of Toras Kohanim. Then it goes on to say, it takes this first verse of Vayikra, and he called to Moses, Vayidabe Hashem Elav, and God spoke to him, May Oyhel Moed, from the tent of meeting, saying. So it's a strange way to open up a book. It's a very novel kind of way. He called to Moses. It doesn't say God called to Moses. It says he called to Moses and God spoke to him, saying. So first the Vav and the beginning of Vayikra, even though it's necessary grammatically, but it sort of ties it to everything else, the Vav, the connector. So the Medrash says like this, Vayikra Vayedaber. First he called, then he spoke. Higdim Kriya Ledibur. So before God spoke to Moses, he introduced himself by calling him. So the Medrash says, Haleidinu, but why do I need to be told that? Ne'ema kan dibur. Here we are told that God spoke to Moses. V'ne'ema b'sne, and when God meets Moses at the burning bush, it spoke to him. And just as the speaking at the burning bush was introduced with calling, so here also, obviously, I don't need to be told that God called him. God calls Moses when he speaks to him. So the Medrash says, no, loyim amris b'dibah hasne. There, when God spoke to Moses at the burning bush, that was the first time he spoke to him. So you can't learn from there that when God is speaking to Moshe at the tent of meeting in the Ohel Moed, that he first calls him. So the Medrash says, well, that's not quite so, because we can prove it from Sinai. Sinai wasn't the first time God was speaking to Moshe. Nevertheless, he called him first. As the Torah tells us in the book of Exodus, and God called to Moses and he went up onto the mountain and so forth. So the Medrash says, well, you could argue that there where God was calling Moshe on Sinai, he was really calling to Moshe and to all the Jewish people. So it's calling, but here, at the Ohel Moed, in the tent of meeting, had we not been told that he called Moshe, I wouldn't have known. So the Medrash says, yeah, but if we use the 13 hermeneutical principles of Rabbi Shmuel, I could done with a Binyan Av, that, you know, I would say like this, when God called to Moshe at the burning bush, that was the first of all the callings. So therefore, I need to be told again by Sinai, because it's not the first that God calls him. And Sinai is different than the burning bush, because by Sinai is speaking to everybody. So we need to be told again, whereas by the burning bush, it wasn't to all the Jewish people. But there is something that they share in common, that God, the Almighty, is speaking to Moshe, and he calls him before speaking to him. So why do I need to be told again? So the Medrash says, well, you could say that there, where Moshe meets God at the burning bush, something's burning. There's this great big fire going on. And when Moshe gets called up the mountain, again, you know, the mountain is burning like a blast furnace. So there, wherever you've got fire, and of course when you got fire, you've got fear, so God has to call Moshe to come. So we're told here at the Ohel Moed, the tent of meeting, that God has called Moshe, and there's no fire, there's no drama, and it's to Moshe alone. It's not the first time, and it's not to anybody else, only to Moshe, because it says Vayedaber Hashem Elov, God speaks to him. So I need to be told that God calls him. So the Medrash goes on to say, I might have thought that only when God speaks to Moshe in a way that, you know, this is a new Torah that he's giving him, the laws of the sacrifices and forth, so God has to call him. But what happens when God calls him to talk, right? Like God says, you know, the Jews have done this, or, you know, if you want to send spies or whatever it is that God, it's not a commandment. So we learn from here also that wherever God is speaking to Moshe, regardless of whether it's a commandment or not, the God always calls Moshe first. So I might have thought that when God pauses, then he also calls Moshe, since you're making such a big thing about the calling. So therefore the Torah says Vayedaber, and he spoke. So only when there's something new. So why would God pause, the Medrash says? What was the purpose of the pauses? To give Moshe a space to contemplate what he had just been taught, or if God was about to start on a new subject, then he would pause. And after the pause, he would start talking again without calling first. And the Midrash says, and so now here we have a kal v'chomer. We have an a fortiori argument. If somebody who's hearing, listening from God, and somebody is a prophet, and God is speaking directly into the mind of Moshe, he needs time, he needs space to pause and think about what he's just learned. How much more so a normal person learning Torah from a normal person needs to stop and think and pause what they're learning. Then the Midrash says, and how do we know that every time God called Moshe, he said, Moshe, Moshe. He didn't just call him once. He said, Moshe, Moshe. So if we go back to the story of the burning bush, there it says, Vayikra elav elikim mitoch hasneh, and God called to him from the burning bush, Vayoyme Moshe, Moshe. So why does he need to say, and he said Moshe, Moshe? Because if we're already saying, and God called to him from the burning bush, could have just said, and God called from the burning bush, Moshe, Moshe. Why does it say, God called from the burning bush and said, Moshe, Moshe? So the and said, now we can learn this from wherever God is speaking to Moshe, he always says, Moshe, Moshe. And how do we know that Moshe answered, Hineni, here I am? Talmud Loima Vayikra Elav Elikim Mitoch Hasneh, God called to him from the burning bush, Vayoyme Moshe, Moshe, Vayoyme Hineni, and Moshe, it doesn't say Moshe answered, it just said Moshe said. So just like God said, Moshe said. So just like God always says, Moshe, Moshe, Moshe always answers, Hineni, here I am. And then the Midrash ends by saying, Moshe, Moshe, Avram, Avram, Yaakov, Yaakov, Shmuel, Shmuel. That Moshe's, when God calls Moshe for the first time, he uses that double expression, Moshe, Moshe. And also we find by the Akedah, the sacrifice of the binding of Isaac, and it says, and a voice came out from heaven and called Avraham, Avraham. Also we find by Yaakov, Yaakov, and Shmuel, Samuel the prophet, also gets called twice. Loshen Chibah, Loshen Zirus. Being called twice is an expression of love. And then the Midrash ends by saying, Moshe, Moshe. Another thing you could say is that the same Moshe before the calling is the same Moshe after the calling. You know, when a person receives something and you get changed by the thing that you receive, then you didn't get the good thing. And in fact, you didn't get the thing. Right? You only receive from God if, after you've received it, you're the same person. If you receive something from God and you're changed by it, then you didn't get anything good. I think I've told the story of the Rebbe Henoch of Alexander. It says that once when I was going to the Rebbe Rebunim for Yom Kippur, like everybody, all the Chassidim would come for Yom Kippur, I was so embarrassed about who I was. And the Rebbe would look at me Erev Yom Kippur and see into my soul, and I was just too ashamed of myself to really go into the Rebbe and give him Shalom Aleichem. But then I saw a bunch of Chassidim had all arrived in Pshischof Yontif, and they all went into the Rebbe together as a group to give Shalom, to say hello. So I joined them, and I slipped in together with them, and the Rebbe, you know, gave a general Shalom Aleichem to everybody, and they left, and I left also, and he called me Hinuch, and my heart lifted up. My heart lifted up. The Rebbe called me, and I turned around, but he wouldn't even look at me, and I left. So that illustrates the story that if he could have turned around and met the Rebbe face to face with the same brokenheartedness that he had gone into the Rebbe, then he could have received from him. The fact that when the Rebbe called him, his heart lifted and he was no longer in that brokenhearted place of teshuva. So the Rebbe's calling him had done nothing. In fact, the Rebbe wouldn't even look at him because he'd been changed by something good that had just happened. And when you get changed by something good that has just happened, when you get changed by the call from God, then it was never, you got never got called. So the Midrash ends by saying the same Moshe who got called, that's the same Moshe who was then afterwards had been called, and so he gets called twice, Moshe, Moshe. That's the Midrash. That's the halachic Midrash, the Sifra. But it's interesting, if we go back to the Midrash Rabbah, and in the second chapter of Exodus of Shmois, where Moshe encounters God at the burning bush, Vayomer Moshe Moshe. So the Midrash also mentions that Avraham, Avraham, Yaakov, Yaakov, Shmuel, Shmuel, but he says there's a difference, there's a qualitative difference. That if you look in the Torah, not in the Torah scroll, but if you look into the Chumash, there's a psik, there's the equivalent of a comma between the first Avraham and the second Avraham, and the same with Yaakov, and the same with Shmuel. But if you look in Exodus chapter 2, where Moshe encounters God, it really says Moshe, Moshe. There's no comma. It's not Moshe, 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 Moshe. So the Midrash says, Lama Kain, why is that so? Moshe la'odam, the Midrash says, I'll give you an analogy. A man, shenitan olav masui goda, there's a person who's carrying this enormous weight, and he's being crushed underneath the weight. He's about to like collapse. V'koira, so he calls, ploini, ploini. Hello, hello, you, you, Moshe, Moshe, Kroivi, you're my korev, you're close to me. Proik me alai masizeh, please lift this burden off me. So whereas Avraham is just about to slaughter Isaac, God says, Abraham, hey, Abraham. But when the Jewish people are in desperate straits in Egypt, then there's such a heavy burden on God that he doesn't say, Moshe, hey Moshe. He doesn't. He says, hey Moshe, Moshe. So the Midrash is saying that when God speaks to Moshe, it's qualitatively different than when God speaks to all the other prophets. That God shares with Moshe, as it were, his pain, and says, Moshe, you have to help me. So there isn't that quality when God says to Abraham, you know, don't do anything to the lad, because now I've seen that you're ready to obey me, whatever I, you know, you really fear me, and you, so it's a test, right? So God isn't, so to speak, in pain. Because God can see the narrative here, you know, that Isaac is not going to be slaughtered. Okay. But here in Egypt, the Jewish people, the entire Jewish people is being crushed underneath this horrible oppression and weight. So God is also, so to speak, being crushed. He says, Moshe, you got to help me. Moshe, Moshe. But with the first Midrash that we've learned, we say that Moshe is always being called Moshe, Moshe. That whenever God speaks to Moshe, there is that implication that God is calling to Moshe, help me. Relieve me of this burden. I'm dying here. I'm being crushed. I can't help it. Just do something. Remove the burden from me. Because the Midrash has learned with the 13 hermeneutical principles that it's always like that. That every time Moshe is spoken to by God, and it doesn't even mean with commandments, it means every time. So what does it mean? It's interesting. Interesting, Beis Yaakov. You know, the Maimonides in Moreh Nevuchim, in the Guide for the Perplexed, in the third in the third book, like three books, three volumes, he talks about the mitzvahs and some of the sort of a logical reason for the mitzvah. And he talks about discusses the entire Beis HaMikdash, the tabernacle, the temple, the idea of temple, and he makes a connection between the pagans and their ways of worshipping. And so God gives us sort of parallel worship, right? So the implication is that if not for the fact that the pagans, you know, sacrificed animals to their getchkes, to their gods, so we wouldn't have been given this whole sacrificial ceremony. And that's often used by modern Jews as a way of, you know, explaining away the whole pageant and ceremony and the blood and slaughter, and the sprinkling of the blood and the burning of the flesh and the whole panoply of the temple worship. I think they call it the temple cult, and that it's some kind of a mirror image or a way of weaning us away from that kind of blood lust or whatever it is that we needed, because we had grown up in a world where that was understood as being the way to worship, and that's how everybody understands the Rambam, the great rationalist, rationalizing the mitzvahs. But, you know, Ishbitz, they didn't believe for one moment that the Rambam is a rationalist. And in fact, from that very chapter, the Ishbitz approves that in fact, Maimonides is a great Kabbalist. We won't go into that now. But he takes this teaching of Maimonides, and because people were used to sacrificing to their pagan gods, so therefore we're given the mitzvah of karbanot, the commandment to offer sacrifices. So he says, you know what Maimonides means with this? He says that there are different ways of worshipping. And worshipping, first of all, it's about kavana. What is your intention? He said, but what happens if I, not only do I have an intention to turn away from God, but I turn that intention into an act? See, if I have an intention to turn away from God, then all I need to do is turn back to God. But what if happens if I've acted it out? What happens if my decision to forget about God and to focus on myself has not just been a decision, but it's also been an act? Well, how am I going to undo that act? I need an equivalent. So he sees what Maimonides is saying as not as a kind of a parallel. Oh, because we were so used to that, therefore we... No, he's saying, but because human beings have managed to integrate worship into the act, I mean, what does it mean to worship? Ultimately, to worship means to adore. If I say to God, I love you, and I'm in awe, and you know, all the other things that spring to mind, that spring to the human mind in the presence of the awareness of the One. But human beings have gone a step further, says Baba. We have found ways of taking that thought and making it an act. And because we did that, so God says, no, you have to undo that. I have to give you a way of taking your emotions and your thoughts and your intentions that you have found a way of turning them into destructive acts, and I need to give you a way of bringing those acts that are tied to those thoughts back again. And so we get the Torah's Koyanim, we get this book of Leviticus, which is really a guide to returning and fixing the thought that was connected or that was bound to an act. The Mishnah says, the Mishnah in Masechta Avos, in the sixth chapter, Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi says, "B'chol yoyim v'yoyim, every single day, bas koil yoytzitz meha choyrev. There's a voice, an echo, that goes out from Sinai, umachrezes and announces v'yomeres and says, 'Oy lehem lebriyos, woe is to creatures me'al boina shel Torah, from the embarrassment of the Torah, because everybody who doesn't learn Torah has excluded themselves or has embarrassed themselves.'" So the Baal Shem Tov asks, most of the Talmid of Baal Shem Tov discuss, the Baal Shem Tov says, what's the purpose in having a voice go out every single day from Sinai if nobody can hear it? I mean, if somebody comes to you and says they did hear it, you'd laugh at them. Tulsi Yaakov Yosef's got a whole spiel about, you know, if somebody came to you and they said, oh, you know, I actually heard this, I learned it, you know, I've been listening to this voice coming up. I mean, what would you say to such a person? It's a mishugana. Who are you trying to fool? So, if there is a voice and nobody could hear it, so what's the purpose of the voice? And if there is a voice and only one person can hear it, you know, what's the purpose? Because if they did come and if one person got on television and said, you know, I heard the voice, mishugana. So the Baal Shem Tov says, we all hear the voice all the time. We all hear the voice all the time. That's the voice inside the human being that's calling and saying, what am I doing? What am I doing with my day? What am I doing with my life? That's the voice that comes out from Sinai. So, this book of Vayikra, the book of Leviticus, we call it Vayikra, and he called. It's really the book of calling. And it introduces this whole worshipful carbon. You know, we don't really have a translation of the word korban. The korbanot, we call them sacrifices, and we call them offerings. But the word korban comes from close, karev, kiruv, to bring close, to connect. And we don't have an English word for it, for what the korbanot are. See, if I call somebody, then if I call Moshe, so he hears my voice and he says, oh, Hesh is calling me, I'll stop what I'm doing, A, and I'll go over and find out what he wants, B. So when you call somebody and they answer, The first thing that they're doing is they stop what they're doing, and the second thing they do is they turn themselves and prepare themselves to hear what you want to say. when God calls you, then the answer is different. When God calls you, then you hear inside, what am I doing? And the second thing you hear inside is Gewalt, I need to connect. The cheshek, the desire that a person has to connect with God, that is the gift of being called by God. So a human being calls me, even if I turn myself around and stop what I'm doing and go in here, my kavana isn't there yet. Then I have to make a decision. Oh, am I going to do what this person wants? Am I not? Am I interested in or am I not? You know, even if my enemy calls me, I stop what I'm doing and I turn around and face them. Even if my heart is full of hatred, right? When HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when the Almighty calls me, then both things happen in a different way. One, I stop whatever it is that I'm doing and I ask myself, what am I doing? And two, I start to tremble with desire for God. So, being called by God is really a gift, right? And in fact, we have this in the Targum. It says, V'koro ze el ze v'omah, kodesh, kodesh, kodesh. And the angels, they call to one another and they say, holy, holy, holy. Right? So the Targum, the translation, the Aramaic translation is, umikablin din min din. And they receive from one another. So to call, if you have somebody to call, already you're receiving. The call that you give out, if you have somebody to call already, that is a gift that you have somebody to call, right? So you're receiving from them the ability to call on them. Mikablin din min din. When God calls to us, He's calling to everybody. Right? Like the Baal Shem Tov says, there's a voice going out from Sinai every moment of the day, calling. And that's what Moshe hears, Moshe, Moshe. That same Moshe, Moshe that he heard the first time, that's the same Moshe, Moshe that he hears every time. Why is Moshe, Moshe different? The name Moshe, she calls him Moshe, ki min ha-mayim mishisiu. The word Moshe means drawn out of the water. And the daughter of Pharaoh found him and she named him Moshe because I drew him out of the water. And the Ishbitzer says in many places that Moshe is different from every creature on earth and that Moshe has no desire whatsoever for anything in the world but God. Ki min ha-mayim mishisihu, he is drawn away from the water. And Avraham Avinu spends his life hoylach unesoya ha-negbo, he's always traveling towards the Negev. The Negev means to be dried out. And Moshe and Avraham is like journeying to that place of trying to get rid himself of any desires but for God. But Moshe is born without any desires but for God. So Moshe is always ready. Moshe can hear that voice, Moshe, Moshe. Because Moshe doesn't have any desires other than for God. That's why Moshe is chosen to be the prophet of all the prophets. You and I, when we hear the call, so the call asks us, why are we connected so much to our desires? Why are we so reluctant to let go of our desires? And how can we get into a state of worship of God if we're not ready to be there in that state of worship of God? When God calls a person, and it's the general call, right? Everybody's being called all the time. Each human being has another gate that they can open. And that's where God says, you got to help me. In Ishbet, you know, we've been learning all these years that even our desires are a gift from God, right? If I have a moment's desire to worship God, or a prayer comes up in my heart, or a song for God, then it's really because God called me, and it's a gift, right? So then God says, yeah, I don't want to give you gifts. I want you to have the pleasure of doing something for yourself, because that's really what you're going to enjoy for all eternity, is not what I give you, but what you feel you deserve, what you earn. So yeah, I can fill you full of desire for me, but then ultimately that's not going to satisfy you the way I want to satisfy. I want to satisfy you with your own desire. So God calls us this way, that each one of us has difficulty identifying the voice. And every human being has a gate that only they can open. We were talking back at, I think at the beginning of the year, we were looking at the book of Genesis, that God hides the light behind this wall of darkness. And in the wall of darkness, there's a hole, right? So if it would be a very primitive hole, I could just see, I'm standing in the room full of darkness, but I can see a wall of blackness, and I can see a tiny hole. I can see there's a brilliant light behind the wall, right? So then I know that there's a brilliant light behind the wall. But what God has done is that He has made that hole human-shaped. So I imagine, now I see, I'm in this dark room, and now the light that's shining in is coming through the shape of a human. All right, I get another stage forward. I put a stained glass window in the shape of a human being. And in the stained glass, I have, you know, the features of it, so the light coming through from the other side is now the shape of a human being. If I go one step further and actually put a human being, I put a human being in that divide between the darkness and the light. That is how God has fashioned the universe. That on the one side there's the brilliant, infinite, unbearable, unseeable light of God. On the other side is absence, the darkness. The gate through which the light shines, it's you, it's me. Each one of us is a gate through which the divine shines. We're connecting heaven and earth, right? We're connecting the light and the darkness. So each one of us has a different desire. So when we're called and we experience desire to connect with God, every person has to find their own unique expression of desire. And it's very hard. You have to look inside ourselves really deep. And the process of being a human being is that we are constantly faced with the hiddenness and forgetfulness. There's hester ponim, the hiding of the divine, and there's the shikha, the forgetting. So, you know, there's a story with the holy Sanz, the Reb Chaim of Sanz, that once he was on his way to shul and he sees a little girl crying. So he says to her, "Why are you crying?" She said, "Oi, we were playing hide and go seek, and I hid. And I hid so well that they gave up looking for me, and they all went home, and they left me here, and then nobody came looking for me." And so she was bereft, and the Rebbe starts to cry. "Oi, Gewalt." He said, "God, what have we done? Everybody's gone home. You hid yourself so we could come find you, and we abandoned the search, and we just went about our own way as though you weren't waiting for us, you weren't waiting to be found." So Vayikra, he calls, God calls, Moshe, Moshe, Moshe being min hamayim shisil, from the water you are drawn. Everybody has their own desire, which is pure and divine, and that you have to find. And if you find that, then God says, then I can reward you for connecting with me, because then I'll be able to tell you that it, well, that was your work. And God says, nothing else will satisfy me but that I be able to reward you for something that you've really done on your own, because that is something that will satisfy you. So more than the calf wants to suckle milk from the cow needs to give the milk. So God says, you have to help me. And this is the Moshe. Everything that Moshe learns and teaches us carries this one message. You want to do me a favor, says God, you have to take this stuff from me. How then we go into the teaching of the karbonos, and what it means, we have to understand that we are the keyhole, we are the gate through which the light passes, the divine light, right? And everything underneath us, doimem semeach chai, right? There are elements that are dumb, like water and like salt. And there's tzimeach, there are things that grow like grapes and wine. And there's chai, there are things that walk about and have a kind of a consciousness like animals, right? That we have to take all these things. And we were learning in Pasuk Mishpatim, you know, if I forget God, if I turn my back on God, then it's not just me, but it's everything that belongs to me turns its back. I am what holds my clothing together. It's not my clothing that makes me. I make my clothes and everything that I own, my car and my money and everything that I own, it's only by my consciousness that these things don't do damage. When I start to lose consciousness of who I am and what I'm doing, then my things also lose consciousness. And so God says, you know, it's not just you that you have to turn your consciousness to me when I call, but as you do so, then the forgetfulness and the hester, the hidden darkness, you know, that went down into your animals and into your plants and into the rocks that you own, everything now has to be brought back. And in doing so, we take those original thoughts of worship. And ultimately, the whole Torah's Koyanim, the whole Torah is really about worship. And that human beings are able to take thoughts of worship, some feelings of worship, and turn them into acts of worship. And because very often we do that in a way that isn't holy. So God says, now I'm going to let you choose. You know, there's the burnt offering and the sin offering and the wave offering and the guilt offering and all the different offerings, and we will have a chance to learn about them individually in the coming weeks. You can choose how you take your worship and reconnect it with the divine. And so then the desire that you have for me, the longing that you have for me, then flows out through you into everything that you own, and so to the whole world. Thank you.